Hello and welcome to a new episode of Elanomics. Before we start this week's episode, I want to make a disclosure. This is an episode, the topic in which we are discussing, we all have a vested interest in. We pay taxes and we want lower taxes. That is the topic of today's Elanomics. But it's not just about wanting lower taxes for the heck of it. There is a very, very strong and sane economic reason for it. We are in the throes of a recovery of the pandemic, and there is no demand in the economy yet. People are not spending. People don't have enough money in their hands. And that is what Professor Ila Patnaik and I are going to talk today. Hi, Ila.
Hi, YP.
How are you doing? And your column today is a column which we see almost every, December, January, in the run-up to a budget, where people say, you know, cut taxes, reduce this, reduce that, give more rebate, maybe change the slab. And every time there's a personal finance angle to the budget, and sometimes something happens, many times nothing happens. But this time, there's a special why this should be taken even more seriously.
So we are in the midst of a pandemic in terms of the demand issue, particularly in terms of the demand issue. As the supply issues have been resolved, we still see demand is low. And there are really two ways to fix it. One is monetary policy and one is fiscal policy. When we're talking of aggregate demand issues, and monetary policy, we're already at a very loose monetary policy. So then in fiscal policy, again, there are fundamentally an expansionary fiscal policy means that you increase the size of the government budget. Okay, so the government doesn't take away things from people, everything that it spends. In fact, it spends more than it consumes. Now, it's very hard for governments to spend. We know that, you know, the whole bidding process, the capacity of the government is very limited. So Radhika and I are arguing in this column that what you need to do is to cut taxes, because cutting taxes effectively puts money into the hands of people who are spenders right away. So even if you were to argue that you don't want to cut taxes of the very rich, I mean, you know, we can discuss that and disagree on that. But suppose you just want to cut taxes of common people so that they have more money in their hands and that they can spend. That is the basic argument that we are making here. Put money into the hands of households and they will spend more, because they are the ones who have lost incomes. They are the ones whose expenditure has been cut, and they are the ones who will fastest, in the most speedy, rapid manner possible, give you the demand push to the economy that you need.
Ila, before, I mean, you have talked about several individual taxes and rates that can be cut or simplified and pruned. But before we go to those individual taxes and tax rates. There is one demand for tax cuts at this point of time, and that is the 2 years to provide relief to people hit by the pandemic. There is grains being given to people, vaccines have been subsidized to a huge level. And being given free to people in government hospitals. So the government is spending a lot of money on these. The money come from for the government to spend on these kind of emergency measures.
So basically the government borrows. Okay. So when it wants to expand, do a fiscal expansion, then the government borrows. I mean, we've also been talking in the past about how we make it cheaper for the government to borrow. We reduce disintermediation costs by bond market reforms. We also allow foreigners to come in. We make our bond markets more liquid so that the government can borrow at lower rates, so that its interest burden comes down. So that goes along with this. So it's not that we are advocating that everything that the government has to spend, particularly when times are difficult, when you've tried to get a recovery, but you haven't yet got the recovery because, you know, COVID keeps coming back. I think, you know, that's the problem, that initially one might have said that, okay, the economy, you had one wave of COVID, if the health system is okay, and if this wave means that we get herd immunity and it goes away, then you can kind of slow down on the expansion. The problem now is that you've got a second wave and now a third wave of COVID. With this third wave of COVID, should one stick to a fiscal consolidation program, which one might have supported? So, I mean, I was very much, if there was just one wave, then the path that one would have recommended would have been different. But given that this is not ended yet and that there is a third wave, now you don't want the economy to slip back again into a contraction. You want households and businesses to be able to survive this wave. And for that, you know, if people have money, they're able to come out and spend more. You just need to give that push, because there are many businesses who've used up all that they could. There are many businesses, you know, particularly the contact intensive businesses. There are towns which are dependent on tourism, which haven't seen tourists the kind of tourists that they need to see for this, for them to survive. So those businesses have borrowed all they could. They've dug into their resources all they could. They've pawned all the gold that they could. And now, to the extent possible, one needs a push in demand. And some of this push in demand can directly go from households to those businesses by tax cuts. Now, think about a household that could have gone for a holiday. Doesn't have to be a very big holiday, just stepping out to go to a restaurant and spend some money. That household can do it directly and the business will get supported. If you think of the, you know, traditional economist way of thinking, then basically you keep taxing the household. Through a very intricate mechanism, the taxpayer or the treasury gets that money. And then that treasury goes and builds roads, let's say. And then the people who build the roads get jobs. And then those people go and demand more. So I am arguing that in the circumstances that we are in now, instead of that circuitous route, which takes about a year even to get a demand expansion, the time is to cut taxes and put money directly into the hands of households, who then create additional demand, and they create additional demand for a lot of the services for which, you know, as this third wave ebbs and as we see activity coming back, it should be supported with greater household demand.
Ila, we will go to the, you know, several taxes you have tackled individually in your column, which is there in the link. The link is there in the notes of the show. And before we take up that, I just want to apologize to our viewers if any of you are facing, issues with my voice or the image, because there is a bit of a bandwidth issue which we're trying to figure out and we are working from home. So please do bear with us. These are special circumstances. Ila, you've talked about the dual tax regime, which is a new thing that was introduced by the government a couple of years back, where they said, there are three slabs for people if you want exemptions, and there are six slabs for people if you don't want exemptions. Tax rates are high on one side, tax rates are not so high on the other side. That has not really taken off, has it?
Yeah, so what reports suggest is that a large number of people are still sticking to the old regime, which clearly tells us that the old regime was giving them benefits, that those exemptions were giving them a better deal than the new regime. Now, what you need to do eventually is, of course, when you introduce an old and a new regime and you want to move away from exemptions, then what you really want to do is you want to make a person at least as well off as he was in the old regime, so that he makes this transition, so that he moves, so that the entire system can move to the new regime. I mean, obviously, it's the having an old and a new and letting people choose was something that was being done in a transition period. That's not equilibrium. So when you want to move from an old equilibrium to a new equilibrium, you kind of look at, okay, are people moving? And of course, if people are not moving, then you need to tweak the new one, right? So the new one is more simple because it doesn't have exemptions, but it clearly doesn't, you know, maybe rates there still need to be lowered, or you need to tweak it so that people become as well off and you can move further on that path, on that transition path, and move towards the new regime. So the one of the proposals we are making is that, can you, you know, they have all the data. They know who's taking, claiming what exemption. So I think the tax authorities have data centers where they actually study this data. So they have data centers for studying direct taxes. They have data centers for studying GST, and they collect a lot of data which can be easily analyzed. So they need to do that analysis so that they can move towards lower and more simple taxes.
Lower and more simple taxes is something what we have been wanting and seeking for a while now. The next tax you tackle is spurring demand for housing by providing tax benefits on repayment of the principal amount and interest amount. That's the deduction, basically. We get for paying either the interest on our home loans or our principal on our home loans. And both of them are so small. I mean,
yeah. So the point really is exactly as you say, that both of them are so small that, and you know, when people take loans, they take them for houses that they buy in markets, which means that that amount should change over time. That amount should move with a movement in house prices. So if houses become more expensive, so you should look back at a period of 5 years. And if in these 5 years, house prices have increased, then in those 5 years, there should have been an increase in these amounts as well. Even if you thought the original amount was the right amount, okay, then just because of inflation of house prices, the size of the loans. Again, what I would say is that tax policy needs to be based on evidence. So they have the data. They have all the data. They know how much people are paying as interest on housing, because people declare that when they claim their benefits. Look at the data and then make policy. And I think it's time to for the authorities to, you know, revisit these hard numbers, which are really very, very small in today's world.
The third point you have made is about standard deduction, and there it's a very small amount we all get as standard deduction, 50,000 rupees from your overall taxable income. And there, Ila, you have talked about something called introducing inflation adjustments for standard deduction. This is something, you know, I personally am hearing it for the first time, but you say this is something which is prevalent in the US among others. Can you explain that for us? How does it work?
Yeah, so suppose I'm getting a deduction of 50,000 this year, and there is a 10%, it's not 10 yet, but suppose there's a 10% inflation rate, then every year the standard deduction should increase by 10%. You know, basically it should be indexed to inflation so that in real terms it remains the same. So if in this year it is 50,000, next year it should be 55,000, and next year it should be higher. So when, if in 1 year you gave standard deduction of 40, then over the years you should have kept increasing it according to the inflation rate. And instead of making it a big making a big song and dance about it every time, if you just you know, have a formula, you index it to the rate, then automatically according to the inflation rate, you know, you index it to the CPI, then automatically that will increase as well. So that's what we are proposing.
So it can also come down, you mean, if it's indexed to inflation?
Well, inflation, if there is deflation, it'll come down. But we've not seen deflation yet.
And the last one, Ila, before we, which is very, very relevant now, condition in the stock markets.
So capital gains tax. Now, the if you remember, Chidambaram brought in the securities transaction tax in place of the long-term capital gains tax. And then what happened was that the securities transaction tax stayed and the capital gains tax stayed. Now, you know, this is the time when a lot of retail investors have gone into the stock market, particularly because the interest rates and returns on fixed deposits is so low. Okay, I would say negative in real terms because the inflation rate is higher than the rate on fixed deposits for most categories. And in that situation, you know, again, charging less tax, you know, like the capital gains tax is anyway something which when households pay it, it's, you know, for housing, for example, it's a nightmare because the buyer tells you, I don't want to show. The seller tells you, oh, I'll get a capital gains tax. I'll have to pay tax on this. The government doesn't collect much from the capital gains tax on housing because everyone then turns around and tries to, you know, state official price versus a market price, and the rest is paid in cash, which of course, you know, leads to a lot of illegality and black money. But that was an aside. Coming back to the proposal here, we are basically saying, look, you do away with these taxes, whether it's the long-term capital gains tax or the securities transaction tax. At least, I mean, you had brought in one for the other. Now you have both, get rid of them. And that again will help households both come more into equity markets because they are stuck in a situation where, you know, returns are very low in fixed deposits. So allow them to come into mutual funds, into government bonds, into, you know, securities, and also puts money into their hands. So overall, you know, the overall point being made is that the best way at the moment is to put money into the hands of households and middle class households. Most of this, I mean, you know, standard deduction of 50 going to, even if it goes to 1 lakh, it's not going to affect the really rich. These are, who will it affect? It will affect the middle class households who are today. We're not seeing the kind of turnaround we might have wanted to see on in consumer spending, okay? Because hey, COVID just keeps coming back and back again and again. So I think one needs to think in new ways and try out new things so that we can get, you know, we can help businesses survive. We can help jobs in those small businesses, which are very, very important providers of employment.
Let's go take questions, Ila. The first one is from Sankalp, and he's going back to the original first argument we were trying to make, government spending versus tax cuts. What does empirical research show? Which seems to have a greater multiplier effect?
Tax cut. So in the immediate context, a tax cut has a greater effect. And in fact, in India, for every rupee that the government spends, it actually takes about...
Am I audible, Leela?
Yeah, you were not audible for a little bit, but I think there's some, maybe at the print or somewhere, there seems to be some...
I'm trying to figure that out myself. Can I repeat my question, Leela?
Yeah, sure.
So, Sankalp is asking, between government spending versus tax cuts, what does empirical research show? Which does have a greater multiplier effect?
So, tax cuts have an immediate greater effect. Okay. Because if the tax cut is for households who have a marginal propensity to consume of one, okay, very poorer households, in other words, or lower middle class households who have a high marginal propensity to consume, then a tax cut means that immediately they spend it all in expenditure. Now, of course, if the tax cut is for people who have a high marginal propensity to save, Then what happens is that because they were going to, you know, they get a tax card, but they don't actually spend the money. They keep the money with themselves. Then the multiplier effect is lower. Okay. So the answer lies not simply in the fact that it's a tax cut or not, but first in whose tax you are cutting. Are you cutting the tax of the super rich, or are you cutting the tax of the poor? The second part of the answer lies in government's capacity to spend. Okay. Now, in India, even when there are resources, you look at the budgets, many times, by the end of the year, the government is unable to spend, particularly at a time like this. So, you know, you give out, you decide, okay, we'll build this road, you acquire the land, you go through various permissions, environmental, other clearances for which the road is to be built. Then the partner, whoever has won the contract, gets a loan, he gets financial closure, or he raises money, he basically gets finance for that. Then the construction work starts. The time lag there, even when it's capital expenditure, the time lag there is very long. Now, there is a third. So then, of course, tax cuts become more effective, but in the short run, because there's a third aspect, and that is that in the long run, if the government has the capacity to build infrastructure, for example, and if that money has come through tax cuts on the rich who are not going to spend it, then under those circumstances, in the long run, there will be a crowding in effect. Okay, so I'm not just talking of the short-term multiplier, but there'll be a crowding in effect. And that crowding in effect is actually beneficial. So that is why the context in which our article was written is this context of an economy trying to recover from COVID, but in the midst of COVID waves. And then, so it's not like a general statement that government should not build infrastructure, because, you know, I can easily see that you could go down that path that, oh, government shouldn't build infrastructure and shouldn't do public goods. We're not going that down that path. We are saying in the present circumstance, this is what is optimal.
Ganesh Agarwala has a question on inflation. Don't you think tax cuts will add to inflation?
Well, current inflationary environment has a lot of reasons. And I feel that in India at the moment, you do need to continue a pickup in GDP growth, and that we can tackle inflation maybe through monetary policy, managing inflationary expectations, cutting import duties, because a lot of the inflation is imported. So we could cut down on those duties and make those products cheaper. Easing supply restrictions that can be eased rather than, you know, not putting money into the hands of people and letting businesses starve. So, inflation is currently more in tradables than in non-tradables. So non-tradable inflation is lower than tradable inflation. So that is why at the moment, I would say we could argue that you can have tax cuts and that will not raise your inflation rate.
The next one is from Rohan Indra, who's been a member for 2 months. Thank you, Rohan. Could municipal rates or property taxes be used as an efficient alternative to income or investment and diesel taxes, given budget constraints and revenue loss from cuts? Tax mix should be focused than tax rates.
Sorry, baby. I couldn't hear properly.
Okay, I will repeat that question. Apologies. Rohan Indra, who's a member for 2 months. Thank you, Rohan. Could municipal tax rates or property taxes be used as an efficient alternative to income and investment and diesel taxes, given the budget constraints and revenue loss from tax cuts? Should we not focus on tax mix rather than tax rates?
I mean, municipal taxes and property taxes have their own role, okay? And yes, municipalities should use property taxes to provide better public goods. And, you know, that's a whole purpose that it has. The question seems to imply that we should cut municipal taxes to put money into the hands of people, because I'm arguing you should cut income tax to put money into the hands of people, but then municipal taxes aren't very high. So I don't know how far they'll go in giving aggregate demand a push. I don't really see the strength in this argument.
Sankalp, who is a member for 6 months now, fantastic. Thank you, Sankalp, for tracking and being with us at the print. Hello, Professor Patnaik. Could at least some rich farmers be brought into the tax bracket? Is inflation the reason for their sovereign immunity status, he asks?
Well, it's a political thing that until now we have not taxed agricultural income. Agricultural income taxation has been, looked at by a number of committees. Many committees have also found that agricultural income is a way to evade other taxes. So you might be making money elsewhere, but if you also own a farm, you show it as agricultural income. So not only should rich farmers be taxed, so whether you're getting your income from farming, whether you're getting your income from working in a newspaper, or whether you're getting your income from any other source which you can then show as agricultural income. All income should be taxed. So that's the principle of horizontal equity, that, you know, wherever you are earning your income from, if the amount of income is the same, you get taxed equally. And that has been a very strong argument that you should be, agriculture should be paying taxes.
We have quite a few questions, Ila, but I think we have time for maybe two or three more at the most. There comes the man, Elon Musk. Kushal Jaisinghani, who's a member for a month now, thank you, Kushal, says, do you think the government should listen to Elon Musk and cut import duties? Do you think cutting import duties will help increase demand across all sectors as costs may come down?
Yeah, yes, I do. I agree with you that initially for any product, I mean, you know, here we are talking of EVs, and that's a different story because India also has made commitments for reducing carbon emissions. But even if that was not the case, you know, even if you talk about any product A, initially somebody might try to test the water, see if there's a market, and lower import duties allow that industry to come in and to see whether they can survive here. I think it'll also help because an infrastructure will get created, you know, so if there are even some cars which are initially getting imported, but you'll get EV plug point, you know, charging stations, maybe battery supplies improve. So you can get a whole ecosystem, and then slowly you can, entrepreneurs will then find it attractive to start producing here. I mean, India is also producing a number of EVs. Some this month itself, I mean, I was reading news reports which said some new, many 11 new models are coming in. But, if industry, global industry, has to be encouraged to come, then the first step is let them come and test waters, let them see the market. So this is not an answer specific to Elon Musk, but in general, I think that's the way to go.
I'll combine two questions into one, and that will be our last one, Ila. One is from Vishal Sharma, who's a member for the last 1 month, and Vishwas Pasi, who's not a member. Vishwas, you should take up a membership soon. Vishwas's question is, do you think at any point in time people in the 40% tax bracket can expect any respite? And Vishal's question is a very, very ambitious one. He says, can we see an India without income tax in the near future?
So, yeah.
40% and 40% and 0%.
No, so I don't think we should be very hopeful on either of these two things. I think this is not currently, especially with the fiscal pressure, you're unlikely to see a lot of benefits for the top income categories. But hopefully one will see some for the lower and middle income taxpayers categories. And second, the best tax is a consumption tax and not an income tax. So if you have a country where there's no income tax and only GST, I mean, we would be very happy paying 20% GST if that was the only tax. Mm-hmm. But that combined with a 30% income tax, of course, makes it killing because that makes it a 50% tax. But hopefully, as the tax base widens, we can move to more consumption taxes than income taxes. But I don't see that in the near future, unfortunately.
That is a bit of a bummer, as the new millennium people would say. But at least let's hope that we will get some relief, some cuts, some adjustment, some simplification, so that everyone can have a little more money in their hands in these times where people have lost their jobs, people have faced salary cuts, so that they can put that money back in the economy and help the economy return to good health. And that's a fervent personal hope as well from all of us. Thank you for watching this episode of Elanomics. We will be back next Friday with another one, and that will be the one just before the budget, and hopefully we will tackle another subject which was specific to the budget. Until then, please take care.